Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
The following podcast is a Dear Media production.
Hi, it's Dr. Will Cole. This podcast is the manifesto for a new breed of health seekers. This is The Art of Being Well. What's up and welcome to The Art of Being Well. I am a leading functional medicine doctor. I get to consult people around the world via telehealth, and I'm a New York Times bestselling author. If you want to learn more about our clinical work, the telehealth center, we have brand new telehealth patient options now open. Lots of free resources if you want to learn about the books there as well. You can check it all out at drwillcole.com. That's drwillcole.com. And listeners, we're giving away free healthy stuff every single month, no matter when you listen to this episode. All you have to do for a chance to win is head on over to Apple Podcasts and rate and review The Art of Being Well there. Tell us what you love about the show. You can leave your Instagram handle in the Apple Podcast review itself, or you could take a screenshot of your review and message me on Instagram at Dr. Will Cole. And every single month, my team and I will be going through the messages on Instagram, as well as the Apple Podcast reviews themselves, randomly picking winners every single month. What are we giving away? You get to choose from, if you win, things like free signed books. We're giving away free functional medicine telehealth consultations with us, giving away free supplement protocol stacks that we have at drwillcole.com. So lots of good things. So you get to choose if you win, and we'll either get you scheduled for the telehealth consult or send you your free signed book or the supplements that you choose. All right, good luck. Let's get to today's guest. Her name is Colleen Cutcliffe. Colleen is the CEO and co-founder of Pendulum. She has over 25 years and counting of experience leading and managing biology teams in academia, pharmaceuticals, and biotechnology. Prior to starting Pendulum, Colleen was the senior manager of biology at Pacific Biosciences and a scientist at Elan Pharmaceuticals. Colleen received her PhD in biochemistry and molecular biology from Johns Hopkins University and her BA in biochemistry from Wesley College. Let's get right to it. This is Colleen Cutcliffe's Art of Being Well. Colleen, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks so much for having me.
I'm such a fan of what you're doing and the innovative science and practical real life application for everybody to benefit everybody's health. So the fact that you were on my schedule today in between patients and I got to speak with you today and geek out about the science, thank you for the opportunity.
Oh, thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah. All right. So let's dig into it. I mean, first of all, maybe let's frame the conversation. How did you get into this space of gut health and not just general gut health, but really, I would say cutting edge gut health science? How did you come upon this space?
Well, I actually came at it from a technology side of the house. So, you know, probiotics and yogurts have been around for a long time. And I think we've all sort of known that gut health was really important for us. But in the early 2000s, DNA sequencing technologies really evolved and allowed us to actually understand what are all these microbes and what are they doing and how they're interacting with our health. And so for me, I came from that technology side. I was at a DNA sequencing company, and just seeing the application in this new field of science and medicine and how exciting new discoveries could be just really got me interested in the space. And as I learned more, I got more and more excited about this new frontier of medicine.
Wonderful. So, all right. So let's talk about one colony forming unit, one specific strain of bacteria that I am fascinated by the science, and you're really getting people access to it. But let's just start with Akkermansia. What is it? Let's define it first and we'll go from there.
Sure. So Akkermansia is a strain that many people have not heard about, but it's emerging as one of these really keystone strains in your gut. And the reason it's so important is because it plays a few functions in your gut lining, and it also is known to play an important role in your metabolism. And so what we're learning about this strain is that healthy people appear to have a ton of it. And if you're low or missing it, it's associated with all these different diseases, ranging from, you know, traditional GI diseases like irritable bowel syndrome and IBD, all the way to things like slower metabolism and immune response deficiencies. And there's even some gut-brain connections that are showing that Akkermansia might be important for those. And so it's becoming this really well-studied strain that everybody's excited about.
Yeah, I'm excited about it. And as someone that looks at labs for a living, I have to say, like, the amount of just general dysbiosis, bacterial imbalances, a lot of opportunistic pathogenic bacteria, people that have SIBO, and there's that lack of that regulatory mechanism of these beneficial probiotics, these beneficial colony-forming units. But one of the ways that we do measure Akkermansia on labs, and obviously there's no perfect tests. These are all snapshots in times, and there's limitations from a diagnostic standpoint at this point in our space in this way, gut health, but it's the best labs we have. And I have to say, like, I see low, very low, suboptimal levels of Akkermansia or undetectable levels of Akkermansia ubiquitously in new telehealth patients. So is this what you're seeing too, this sort of decimation of these keystone bacterial strains?
Yeah, I think what you're observing is one of the reasons why people started to wonder what's going on here. And I think we've often thought about the role of, you know, nutrition and fitness and trying to maintain a healthy gut. But what we're realizing is that there's a lot of reasons why you might lose these keystone strains, which include things like stress. So when we go through periods of intense stress, that can cause us to lose the diversity of our microbiome. As we age, we start to lose the diversity of our microbiome. And even when we travel and day becomes night and night becomes day, our circadian rhythm gets disrupted, we can start to lose these strains. And so what happens over time just by living and being a human is you can start to lose these strains. And what happens as a result of that is you start to lose these core functions like your gut lining capabilities and your metabolism capabilities. And so, you know, a lot of us as we age, we sort of kind of shrug our shoulders and say, well, this is just part of aging. But the truth is you might not have to accept all of these things. It might just be that you're depleted in these keystone strains.
We know more now, like versus our grandparents, even great grandparents, where they maybe times were better there as far as soil health anyways. But, you know, there's just a few generations ago, people didn't know, they didn't have access to this stuff and people were struggling with health problems. And even though in many ways we are sicker now than they were, the flip side of that, we know more than ever before when it comes to improving our health. So what a blessing, silver lining that is, I guess. So can you talk about some maybe lifestyle stuff that happens in our adult life or over cumulatively as we age that can happen? It's a common question that I get from new patients when we're going over these labs is, well, how far back does my life play a role in the choices that were maybe done to me as a child, even in utero, how babies are born? They hear these things of these determinants of the diversity or lack thereof of the microbiome. Can you talk a little bit about what the research shows on these early formative years before we even actually making any decisions for ourselves, how that plays a role in our microbiome?
Sure. I think, you know, like everything that goes wrong for us, we can always blame our mothers. As a mother myself, I'm familiar with this. But essentially, you know, it's from the minute you're born, we know that it makes a difference whether you're a C-section baby or a vaginal, you know, birth baby. We know that, you know, right now, if you're a preemie, one of the things that happens is you're given antibiotics, not because you're sick, but it's a prophylactic to make sure that you don't get sick because you're so fragile. We know that antibiotics will completely decimate your microbiome. We know that the first foods that you're introduced to really start to shape your microbiome. And we also know that those early days can really set the stage for later on what starts to colonize. And those are important for the development of your immune system, your inflammatory response, and all of those things. So it's easy to sort of say like, oh, it all started back when, you know, I had no control over my situation. But I think the beauty and the promise of the microbiome is that you can change it. So unlike your genes where you're born with and it only kind of gets worse from there, the microbiome is changeable. You can introduce new strains, you can deplete certain strains. And so even though you might have started on a bad path and there might have been all these other reasons why you don't have an optimal microbiome now, you have the opportunity to make it better.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I'd also know, like, one of the questions that we ask for new telehealth patients is, and they wonder why I'm asking this, but do you know if you were breastfed or not? Was it a longer time or is it a short period of time? Like, these are things that, yes, were done to you, was a choice that you did not make, right? And there's zero shame. Like, I don't want to, like, we're joking about it, but I don't want to shame any mothers or, you know, that's a choice that they have. Some moms can't breastfeed. I'm not shaming anybody. Or C-sections can be life-saving sometimes. So it is what it is. And the research is what it is. And like you said, it's not, while we're screwed, there's nothing we can do about it. We'll just throw your hands up and this is your lot in life. The opposite. We just have to know what we're up against to do something about it. And some of us have to be extra vigilant because a lot was done to us. And then we did a lot to ourselves. So it's no shame to you or your parents. It's just, what can we do now to start moving your health in the positive direction? This is really about empowering, no matter where you're at, no matter how messed up your childhood was. Like, what can you do today to start moving your health in the positive direction? So, all right, let's jump back into acromantia and its research. And I've seen its connection with GLP-1. Can you talk about maybe defining GLP-1 and what's the connection between GLP-1 and acromantia?
Sure. So GLP-1 is sort of becoming a much more popularized small molecule than we ever knew before through some of the drugs out there like Wegovy and Ozempic. And what it is it's actually a naturally occurring molecule in our bodies. Those drugs are trying to mimic the natural GLP-1 in our bodies. And the way that our bodies work is that when we eat food, that food is metabolized by our gut microbes, and acromantia is a really important microbe because what happens after that metabolism is that it signals to these cells, which are right at the microbiome lining. These L cells are right there. These L cells are important because they have GLP-1 literally just sitting inside of them. And what they're waiting for is a signal from the microbiome and from acromantia to tell them to release the GLP-1 into the bloodstream. And so when you eat, acromantia and other strains stimulate your L cells and let them know it's time to release GLP-1. And GLP-1 plays a few really important functions. The first is that it signals for insulin to be released to start metabolizing the glucose that you just consumed in your food. So this helps you metabolize your sugars. If you can't metabolize those sugars, you start to have, you know, what's called prediabetes and type 2 diabetes. So it helps you metabolize the sugars in the food that you just ate. And it also signals to your brain, hey, we just ate, so we don't need to eat anymore. So you get a feeling of fullness. And this is really important for us to know, okay, it's time to stop eating or I've eaten enough. And so after you eat, you get a spike of GLP-1 that's been released. And then it goes away. And then the next time you eat, you get a spike again. And this is part of our natural system that tells our bodies to metabolize the sugars that we just ate and to not eat anymore. And so acromantia, there's only two strains in the gut microbiome that have ever been published to show that they can stimulate this GLP-1 secretion. One is acromantia. The other one is Clostridium butyricum. And so if you are low or missing acromantia, what's happening is you're eating foods and you're not getting that stimulation to release GLP-1. And so now you're not being told that you're full and you're not metabolizing your sugars as well. And that's one of the reasons why acromantia is such an important natural part of our body signaling to on metabolism.
Mm. So a lot of people, it's like the craze, right? And I get asked the question all the time, like, what's my hot take on semaglutide, on Ozempic, on Wegovy, all these many. So this is a way, this is a tool within the toolbox to support these same pathways and naturally, endogenously, right?
Exactly. And really the big difference between what we're talking about here and those drugs is that those drugs are, they're chemicals that are designed to look just like your GLP-1 and kind of trick your body into thinking like, oh, this is GLP-1. Mm-hmm. And you inject them directly into your bloodstream and they maintain these levels at really high constant rates. And so your natural system kind of goes up and down, but these kind of have this time release so that they maintain very high levels of GLP-1 signaling. And that's why people who take those drugs have almost immediate, you know, within hours, feelings of satiety. Okay, I'm not hungry anymore. And their body's constantly metabolizing sugar. And so they get these very immediate, very dramatic effects. But your body does naturally have the capability to do this. It's just not quite as dramatic as the drugs.
Yeah. And that's also why, in part, the gastrointestinal symptoms that are potential with these medications like gastroparesis and other GI issues, I mean, it is manipulating your own physiology versus making these things endogenously. I'm also aware of the research between acromantia and neurodegenerative issues like MS. Can you talk about this research? It's really exciting for me being in the autoimmune telehealth space.
Sure. I think the gut-brain connection is super interesting and the relationship with autoimmune responses. So the first thing, you know, we talk about the gut-brain relationship is that there's literally an avenue for neurotransmitters that are made in the gut to go to the brain. It's called the vagus nerve. And it turns out that our guts make a ton of these neurotransmitters. So they make things like dopamine, serotonin, GABA, and they go to the brain. The other really interesting thing is that you actually have neurons in your gut. So I actually did not know this for a long time. I thought we only have neurons in our brain. And those neurons, many people might know, you kind of get what you get. And over time, when they die, they never revive again. But the neurons in your gut are really different. So they are constantly actually regenerating. And one of the really amazing things that scientists have discovered is that these plaques that are associated with things like Alzheimer's and Parkinson's disease, these plaques that form in your brain neurons, they actually start forming in your gut neurons first. And so there's this new theory that essentially it's your gut neurons that start to have problems first, and then they transmit that signal to your brain neurons. So the gut might be a really big opportunity to go after these gut-brain diseases. Now we start to talk about these autoimmune diseases like MS. One of the things that people have observed is actually that these patients with MS have higher levels of acromantia as they're going through these. And so I would say this is all a very early science. People are just discovering this, but there's currently a hypothesis out there around potentially our body and our microbiome's ability to respond to diseases by upregulating these strains, which then help us kind of fight these autoimmune diseases. And so what's becoming really interesting is that there's some really great work coming out of a couple of labs at Harvard where they're really trying to understand how can we use acromantia to reduce the symptoms of MS. And they're seeing some really great results coming out of these animal trials. So I think there's just big opportunities there that we are just starting to scratch the surface of.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I fully agree with that. Beyond acromantia, are there any other bacterial strain that you're really excited about, the science around it, but you feel like not enough people know about it and we need to change that?
Well, I think there's a bunch of them that people don't necessarily know about, but should. You know, most of us, if you look at kind of the labels on probiotics, most of us are dealing with strains that start with either Lactobacillus or Bifidobacterium. So if you start reading those labels, you'll start to see those names popping up everywhere. But there's entirely other categories of strains that are super important for us. And we've just talked about acromantia, but there's another group, which are these clostridial strains. Now, Clostridium difficile kind of has a bad name because it can be pathogenic. It can cause people to get really sick, actually even die. But there are other clostridial strains that are super important for us. So one is Clostridium butyricum. And as its name suggests, it produces butyrate, mm-hmm. which is an incredibly important small molecule. And so I think what we're starting to understand is that some of these clostridial strains, Clostridium butyricum and Clostridium bajorinca, are actually really important for our health. And I think, you know, we're very excited about the research coming out around their role in producing butyrate as well.
Yeah. So, and this is another thing that we can quantify on labs when we look at these short chain fatty acids like butyrate and other ones that are these end products of bacterial fermentation, right? And certain bacteria are the extra great and are the one specific producers of these beneficial short chain fatty acids. So for people that are like, all right, butyrate, why should they care about making sure they're optimizing their endogenous butyrate production?
Well, butyrate actually has been known for a long time to be really important in your colon and for colon health. And the colon cells are really different from every other cell in your body in that they use butyrate as their primary source of energy. Every other cell in your body uses glucose for energy, but your colon uses butyrate. And that means that if you don't have enough butyrate, your colonic cells are not getting the energy that they need in order to survive, replicate, fight things off. And so things like all of these different colon-related diseases, including colon cancer, have been associated with low butyrate production. And then we're also starting to understand that butyrate is really important for metabolism. So when we talk about, hey, how does your body know that it should be releasing GLP-1? One of the small molecules that's important for that signaling is butyrate. And so if you're low in butyrate, you're not going to have as much of that signaling that tells your body to release GLP-1. And so butyrate has been studied for a long time in the lab, as well as in animal models, to show it's important for colonic cells and its importance for metabolism. But it's been really tricky to translate that into humans. And I think at the end of the day, what we're starting to realize is that there's a delivery problem. Because butyrate is used by all of your cells, it's actually really hard to get it to the site of the receptors. And I kind of liken it to, if I was going to give you $1 million, would you rather me put it in a suitcase, knock on your door and hand it to you? Or would you rather I called you up and said, I scattered it all over Highway 101? You'd probably rather I brought it to your home in a suitcase, because you know, if I scattered it all over Highway 101, everyone would pull their cars over and take all of your money. And that's essentially what's happening when you take a butyrate pill. The butyrate is getting absorbed by all those colonic cells before it actually gets to the receptor to do the job. And so this is where the microbiome and these probiotics become really important, because they deliver the butyrate in a suitcase right to the receptor where it needs to get to.
I love that analogy. I love it. So we have these butyric acid, these butyrate producing bacteria that are extra good at producing butyrate, which we need for immune health, gut health, even brain health, right, too? And acromantia. All right, we have covered those two. Any other bacterial colony that people should look out for?
I think, you know, one of the strains that we're very excited about, although it's not in any of our products yet, so stay tuned, is F. pratzenutzii. So this is a strain that is emerging. If you do a gut test, you might notice it showing up on the first page next to acromantia as a keystone strain. It appears to be playing a role in people's immune responses, a really important role there. And so we've been really actively studying this strain. And so hopefully, you can't get that strain on the market today, but hopefully that's something that we'll learn more about and make available in the future.
Stay tuned, everybody. I think that was a little breaking news right here. All right. So let's talk about, all right, the science is one thing, right? The research is one thing, but then it's like, how do you get the strains to market in like the everyday house, like let's use for the average person out there? And then the potency, the bioavailability, the survivability of these things can be really delicate. I mean, I'm sure this has been grueling work that we do not see on the front end. What does that look like? What's the level of science to even make it usable in the human body?
Well, I think if we start with the initial kind of microbiome therapeutics that were derived from this new microbiome science, it's not pretty. It's these fecal microbiome transplants, which is exactly what it sounds like. So you're literally putting somebody else's shit in your own body.
Yeah. We talk about FMT quite a bit on this podcast, so they're familiar with it. You're talking about poop transplant science aficionados right now.
Amazing. All right. So then everybody here knows that those are actually really effective treatments, but not a very pleasant way to live your life, and certainly not something you want to be doing on a regular basis. And so the challenge becomes, okay, if you believe that those stool transplants are beneficial and you believe there's something within those stool transplants that's actually conferring that benefit, how do you figure out what are those components? And then how do you deliver them in a way that is manufacturable, reproducible, measurable, and deliverable, that, you know, isn't going to cause everybody to, you know, feel sick every time they think about doing it? And so for us, the identification of these strains, such as acromantia, was step one. And then figuring out how to grow them was actually step two. That I would say when we first started, we didn't think that was going to be hard. I mean, probiotics are manufactured all around the world very efficiently. And so we just thought, we'll send you guys the strain, you'll send us back pills, and we're good to go. But what we've started to learn is that these keystone microbes and these really important microbes that we were learning about from microbiome science reside in a part of your gut, your distal colon, that actually has no oxygen in it. And so as a result, these strains, they actually can't tolerate any oxygen. And of course, there's a ton of oxygen in the air around us. And so What happens is you have to figure out how to manufacture these strains in an environment that mimics the distal colon. And one of the biggest things is you have to figure out a way to manufacture them without any oxygen in your system. So we ended up having to build a manufacturing plant that is end-to-end closed with no oxygen in it so that you could grow these strains. And then we had to figure out after you grow them, this is sort of like if you've ever been to a brewery or a vineyard, there are these big tanks where you're growing them. And then afterwards, you have to figure out how do I actually harvest these cells? And then how do I get them into a powder format and into a pill that eventually a person can take that will then make its way all the way back to their distal colon, reconstitute the strains and have them do the activity that we want them to do. So it's like taking something out of the body, reconstructing it, and then delivering it back into the body and trying to make sure that you are growing them so that they're viable. You are freeze drying them into a powder format where they can maintain that viability on a shelf or in a refrigerator. And then you're putting them in a capsule that allows them to get to the distal colon. And then you're giving them all the nutrients they need so that when that capsule disintegrates, they can come back to life and do the activities that you want. So there were a few steps in there we weren't really aware of when we started down this journey.
Oh, but my gosh.
Everyone is important.
Oh my gosh. So how long did that take to like work out all of these kinks?
Well, we have been a company for a little over 10 years, but we've only had products on the market for about 2 to 3. So the first almost decade was all of this R&D work.
Oh my gosh. That is, I mean, it makes sense. I mean, you literally, yeah, it makes complete sense. Being this cutting edge, you have to create everything from the ground up, providing this. I mean, when you have that vision, like something that's really never been on market, cutting edge science, I mean, was that always the vision? Like, we want to be leaders and pioneers in this space. And do you ever have any doubt of people understanding it, getting it? I mean, what was that process like to be that much visionary energy, if you will?
Well, first of all, I don't think that we thought we were visionaries. We thought the problem was going to be much simpler than it was. So I think that what we really believed was that this new discovery of all of these new strains was going to be important for human health. And I think at the end of the day, the mission of the company was and always has been kind of my own mission, which is that, you know, we want to create products that are really going to help people benefit their health. And what we believed was that you could do more than just help people with GI distress. You could start to really help people with things like metabolism and help them boost their metabolism as it starts to get depleted or as we start to age or it gets worse. And so I think we didn't know that it was going to be, we didn't know there was going to be this kind of manufacturing challenge, and we didn't know there was going to be this challenge of delivery. I think we just thought that there was this big opportunity, and we've been super lucky in that all of the people that have come alongside us, our investors, our partners, the people in the company, have really taken each one of these challenges and, you know, put your gloves on and you go fight that battle. And you don't know the next battle you're going to fight, but you're ready for it. Because at the end of the day, if you aren't making something that's going to help people with their health, they're not going to want to take it. They're not going to believe in it. And people are not stupid. They're not going to just take things just for the sake of taking them. And so you have to create products at the heart of it that really benefit health. And that's why we spent so much time solving every one of these problems, because we did not want to bring anything to market that was just going to be the same old generic, you know, stuff that's out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And it's definitely not. It's completely in a class of its own. All right. So the mechanism of action, I'm always interested in this and like what you've seen in the research and how it specifically works. And you mentioned the survivability, getting to the distal colon. And is it modulating the microbiome? Does it grow and then stay? I mean, what does the research show as far as the re-inoculation, if you will, of these specific colony-forming units, these beneficial compounds? Is it something that people should be taking ongoing from a maintenance standpoint, or will it stay to healthy levels after a certain time of taking the product?
Well, the first thing is, as a practitioner, you know, the answer is it depends on the person. So it varies from person to person. So one of the things that we looked at in this study that we did was really a washout period. So in that study, we had people on a product for 90 days and then a washout period for 30 days. So what that means is that they took pills every day for 90 days, and then they stopped taking pills for 30 days. And we looked at their microbiome over that period of time and what the changes were that were happening. And what we found was that for almost everybody, when they were taking the pills, after 90 days, you can see these strains showing up in their microbiome. And we could also see the activity of them, not only in the microbiome, but also in their health outcomes. And after 30 days of not taking the pills, almost everybody kind of lost the strains. But there was a subgroup of about 15 to 20% of people that still had the strains even after they'd stopped taking the pills. Mm. And so that became really interesting to us. You know, what is it about these individuals that's allowing them to kind of colonize and sustain these strains? And it's still a place of active research for us. But the leading theory behind that is that these individuals are eating something that's helping them to sustain the strains. So these probiotics, these bacterial strains that are in your gut, they survive off of the food that you eat and the prebiotics that you're feeding them. So we know that you can use high fiber and high polyphenol diets to help increase your acromantia levels. So what we suspect is, even though we told people don't change your diet, what we suspect is that these individuals had or introduced a high fiber, high polyphenol diet that then allowed these strains to colonize. So in the end of the day, if you're able to kind of sustain this kind of a diet, you likely don't have to keep taking the pills. Now, as we mentioned before, there are things that are outside of your control that can cause you to become depleted in these strains around aging and stress and menopause for women. At those points, you might need to kind of reintroduce the strains, but there's not a reason why you have to be on the pills for the rest of your life if you can modify your nutrition and your diet to feed them.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yeah, and that's where my mind went to, these other lifestyle fiber, polyphenol ways to support these beneficial keystone colonies. Or, I mean, like you said, it's an active field of research, some sort of compensatory or complementary bacterial colony that those people have that's like preserving or maintaining acromantia, maybe. So let's talk about that. That was actually one of my next questions, is what are some other ways to support acromantia in the body? You mentioned fiber and polyphenols. Any specific foods that stand out that are fiber rich or polyphenol rich that are helpful with supporting these beneficial colonies?
Sure. In particular, inulin is a type of fiber that has been shown to kind of in an outsized way increase your acromantia levels. So Jerusalem artichokes, asparagus, basically your produce aisle with all those greens in there are great sources of that kind of fiber. And then polyphenols, similarly, a lot of berries, so pomegranates, cranberries, these are very high in polyphenols. Also red wine, dark chocolate, coffee. So there are some sources of polyphenols that might also feed another part of your body, your mental state. But, you know, these are the foods and the things that are really high in inulin and really high in polyphenols. They've been clinically shown to help increase your acromantia levels as well.
Okay. Is there any, like, how much people should consume in a day to kind of hit a therapeutic threshold, or any, and do you have any opinions on that?
And I should probably be asking you that question about what is the recommended fiber? What is it, like 30 grams?
Yeah. And that's low by many standards, right? But you know, fiber is a balancing act. Like, this is a great example. Inulin, while we want to start low and slow and build that up, some people can get flare-ups from too much fiber. And it's not the fiber's fault. It's that there's so much dysbiosis, bacterial overgrowth, and reactivity in the gut, which is another reason why I think that, of course, food is first, but you have to meet your gut with where it's at. And sometimes supplementing with a probiotic is a lot more sustainable, a lot more practical, and then start low and slow with food. But yeah, you're right. In that ballpark, people should be getting. But I mean, we're at the point now where we have so many gut health issues that people are reacting to these fibers and they have to be kind of judicious. But that's the general advice. You're right. And then polyphenols. I mean, obviously, our goal would be to get those at every meal. I mean, these antioxidant and polyphenol rich foods, nutrient density as a whole, even beyond these compounds. Do you make a point, knowing this research, to get these foods in your day?
Well, I would say I'm not the best at this. I don't have the world's best diet, but definitely I think, you know, being aware can help you try to increase these, and honestly, trying to get some good recipes that, you know, are going to help you get these foods. And the other thing, actually, one of the things that we started doing in our house is that at dinner, I always put a bowl of berries in the middle. And one of the things that happens is, as you're talking, you just naturally like kind of pick and eat at these things. And so it's an easy way to kind of get those in while you're having conversation, enjoying a meal with other people. So I think there's little things that we can do to try to nudge those good behaviors. But generally speaking, it is hard to get lots of fiber in your diet, and it is hard to get these polyphenols in, but they're so good for you.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be curious to hear, with your experience, because you mentioned sometimes these probiotics can be a better path towards, you know, colonization and then ramping up your diet, you know, what benefits that you've sort of seen from the use of, you know, maybe acromantia in particular, because we're kind of showing that strain.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they are very, very helpful for people that have reactive digestive issues, a lot of food sensitivities, bloating, IBS issues. People that have tried other probiotics, they are really seeing a needle moving capacity in these keystone colonies, Akkermansia specifically, that I'm very excited being in the clinical telehealth patient space. I'm so excited that I have that tool to bring in to people, whereas we didn't have it before. Do you have, because this, I'll tell you what we do sometimes, and I want to see what you recommend from the research side, is that we will combine the Akkermansia by itself, your product, with other spore-based probiotics and some postbiotics too, and obviously prebiotics with the fiber, meeting the person's gut where they're at, sort of a synergistic effect, and then focusing on fiber and polyphenols, all of that from food too. Is that something that you like from your side of things? Or do you, obviously Akkermansia stands on its own, but the synergistic effect, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I'm very much with you on that. You know, first of all, the microbiome is an ecosystem. So introducing one thing that you might be depleted in, you know, you might get an outsized response, but it is an ecosystem. And so in fact, we do sell Akkermansia by itself, but we also sell it in formulation with other strains that we know that it works with. And then I think these spore formers are also a great additive, you know, orthogonal way to really boost your microbial ecosystem. And then for sure, the prebiotics, you know, pairing the food with the strains, it will really, it's just sort of like if you have a car with an amazing engine, but you put shitty fuel into it, you won't have a high performing car. You got great fuel and a great engine, and now you're off to the races with your amazing car. And so your prebiotics and your nutrition is that fuel that goes with your engine, which are your different microbial strains. I'm less sold on the postbiotics because I think if you do a good job with the right prebiotics and the right probiotics, they will produce the postbiotics in the right location. And so that part I'm not sure about. I'm not sure about the data around that being super strong, but for sure the prebiotic and the spore formers with Akkermansia, that there's a lot of data to support that.
Yeah, well, you're right. Absolutely right. That's first and foremost. But I find these people that have decimated guts, and I am talking to about a population of people that have autoimmune problems, really unhealthy guts, that I think therapeutically what I've seen is some judicious use of postbiotics, butyrate specifically, while we're working on bacterial diversity and gut resilience, et cetera, can be a temporal tool. And urolithin A, I like the research around that postbiotic as well, which many people don't even have the bacteria to produce these postbiotics because their gut's so messed up, right? For lack of better words. Don't take it personally, people. So that's kind of my thoughts on it. But ultimately, these probiotics and prebiotics are first and foremost from a sustainability and longevity standpoint, to be able to naturally produce these postbiotics. I'd love to pick your brain about going back to GLP-1 and the people's craze about weight loss and Ozempic, semaglutide. Are there any other tools that you like, science-backed tools, compounds, if you will, that are supportive of metabolic health, metabolic flexibility, blood sugar balance, anything else that may not be a probiotic, but that are complementary to these compounds?
Well, first of all, I will share here, I don't even know if I'm supposed to be saying this, but I'll share with you that
exclusive, people.
We are going to be launching a GLP-1 probiotic, which we've selected. Remember I said there's two strains that have been shown to be able to stimulate it. There's a third strain that actually works with them. And so we're going to be launching that. And really, you know, it's a natural way to kind of go through that process that we talked about, stimulating GLP-1. And what we found is over 90% of people who are on that product within 6 weeks have significantly diminished food cravings. Mm-hmm. And I think this is one of the things that people battle, is just you're hungry all the time, or this food noise. You're thinking about food from the minute you wake up to the minute you go to bed. It's just all about food. And so that's a misfiring in your brain, that the fact that you're thinking about that all the time. And so if you can increase your body's natural production of GLP-1, you can reduce all that food noise. And that gets you started on a really good cycle of, okay, I'm not thinking about food all the time, so I'm not eating bad foods all the time. And now I'm getting more energy and I'm making good choices because I'm not hampered by all this, you know, food cravings and food noise. So we're, I think, super excited to kind of come in and give people those tools in a very defined way. There are other things, and we know, kind of getting back to our prebiotic conversation, that if you're able to load up on the prebiotics like fibers, that you can also have some of these similar responses. And then I think there's some reasonably strong data around other things like berberine, polyphenols, particularly these green tea extracts. Those have some, I think, strong data supporting that they can also be an important part of your toolbox in metabolic syndrome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. So right now, and thank you for that exclusive, by the way. I mean, when does the GLP-1 centric probiotic come out? Do you have any estimated, I won't hold you to it, but just like a ballpark time?
It will be before the end of this quarter.
Oh, okay. All right. So we're talking about soon-ish.
We're talking about hopefully before your spring break.
Hey, man. This is exclusives. You heard it here first on The Art of Being Well. All right. Thank you for that. All right. So right now, what products, what formulations do you have out right now? So people can know, like, what's the protocol look like? What's the stack look like? And then how do we use the products? What does like a day in the life look like with your products?
Okay, so to kind of navigate these different products, I think it's helpful to know what is the problem that you're trying to solve, and that's how you're going to pick which product is right for you. So the first product is Pendulum Glucose Control. This is if you have type 2 diabetes and you're trying to lower your A1C, lower your blood glucose spikes. This is a formulation of strains, of which Akkermansia is one of them, that has been clinically shown in a paper that was published in BMJ. This was a placebo-controlled, double-blinded, randomized trial where it was shown that that formulation after being on it for 90 days compared to placebo was able to lower A1C by 0.6 and lower blood glucose spikes by 33%.
Wow.
So if that's what you're trying to go for, that's the product for you. I actually don't have diabetes, but I took that product, wore a continuous glucose monitor. I saw my postprandial glucose spikes reduced being on it. And so if that's what you're trying to go for, that's the product. We also have Metabolic Daily, which is the exact same strains that are in glucose control, but at a lower dose. So if you're somebody who's saying, well, gee, I'm not all the way at type 2 diabetes, but I really want to manage the way my body metabolizes sugars and carbs, then Metabolic Daily is for you. If you want just Akkermansia, so let's say you've taken a gut microbiome test, you think, look, my problem is I'm just low in Akkermansia. I've got some gut lining that I'm worried about that's leading to my GI distress or whatever the symptoms are that are associated with that, then you can just take pure Akkermansia. Sometimes it's just people who their preference is to start with a minimum viable product. And so they don't want to go all the way to formulation. They want to start with just a single strain. Mm-hmm. And so that's really the lineup of products. We also do sell polyphenol. Polyphenols, there's a wide variety of them. And so we studied a bunch of them and we found that there were three polyphenols that specifically worked with our Akkermansia strain. And so we just put those into a pill. And so we sell those polyphenols and that's sort of a booster that helps you grow these strains. And so whether you want the full, I've got type 2 diabetes, Pendulum Glucose Control, gee, I'm good. I just want to metabolize sugars and carbs better. That's Metabolic Daily. I just want Akkermansia because that's the thing that I think I'm low in. And then for all three of those, polyphenols are a good add-on if you're not getting it in your diet.
Love that. I love that. Make it so easy for us. And then TBD on the GLP-1 probiotic for people. All right. So as you know, the podcast is called The Art of Being Well. At the end of every episode, we have Your Art of Being Well, where I pick your brain on different things that I'm curious about of what the art of being well looks like for you. First question is, what is the worst tasting healthy food? Tastes disgusting, but you still have it because there's nutrition science behind it or whatever. It makes you feel good. Do you have a food that fits that criteria?
Well, I love food. I love to eat. And so there aren't that many things that I think don't taste good or can't be made to taste good. And if they don't taste good, I usually don't force myself to eat them. But I will say this, when I first had kale, I did not think it was good at all. Since then, I've learned how to prep kale in ways that I think are actually really delicious. But the first kale I had was just a kale salad with some lemon juice on it. And I thought that was pretty nasty. But kale's so good for you. And so I figured out a way to make it delicious.
Right. And like steaming it down a little bit, cook, you know, what's your tips to make kale edible?
My favorite way to eat it now is you literally just saute up garlic, throw your kale in there. To your point, you know, you don't need to overcook it or anything, but if you cook it on a high heat, you can actually get it to be a little bit crispy, just some salt and pepper. The other is kale chips, which my kids consume. I mean, they can eat, you know, four bunches of kale just as kale chips. And that's super easy. You literally just throw these into your oven at like 300 or 325 for 20 minutes. And now you've got essentially, you know, potato chips, but they're kale chips. And you, I don't even add anything to them. They're naturally salty.
Right. Yeah. You can add maybe some nutritional yeast if you wanted to, or, you know, spices if you wanted. But yeah, you're right. I mean, the raw kale, I mean, sometimes people are nervous about coming from the autoimmune or gut health space of oxalates, and they can maybe kind of be hyperbolic, I think, about this stuff. But people don't realize that if you cook these foods down, it makes it more digestible. And like we're talking about right here, which you get the nutrition from it and it tastes better anyways as well. What are, if you had to say like your top ideal dream vacation, what would that dream holiday be for you?
Well, I love going to Hawaii. I mean, I live in California, so it's doable to get out to Hawaii, but I grew up in Georgia. And so Hawaii was always this sort of magical place that we could never really figure out how to get to or afford or anything like that. And so first time I went to Hawaii, I was in college. And so I love it because I think that it's a tropical island where it really just feels different, but it's so, so relaxing. I mean, it's beach time. People there are super friendly. The food is delicious. I love Hawaii.
What's your favorite Hawaiian island?
We usually go to Maui. Yeah.
That's my favorite too. I love Maui. I went there on our honeymoon when my wife and I got married, and we've been back a few times since then. It's just a special place. Have you ever been to, shout out to Mama's Fish House in Maui? It's the best fresh seafood you'll ever have. Have you been there before?
Yes. And I would say specifically their oysters are really fantastic there too.
It's a great place. Great place. All right. Next question. What is a piece of advice that you've gotten in your life that's just, it stuck, it resonated with you, that you think of often?
Probably one of the most important pieces of advice I got is actually from my dad, which is that you can do it all, just not all at the same time. And so I think many of us kind of try to multitask all the time. We're trying to get lots of things done because we're trying to do it all. And I basically don't multitask. I do one thing at a time, but when I'm doing it, you know, you've got me on it with my full brain power. And so for me, what that's led to in kind of a practical life is real compartmentalization of my time at work, my time in meetings, my time with my family, even my time with my dogs. Like when I take the dogs out to the park, I'm not doing anything. I'm just hanging out with the dogs. And so I think what that's allowed me to do is to really be in the moment, fully in it, be really efficient at what the thing is that I'm trying to get done, and then, you know, let it go and not try to do lots of things at once. But it's really that it allows me to have all the things that I want, but just not all at the same time.
That's great advice. And people that think they're great at multitasking, they may be better. There's people that are better, but it's not great from the brain to be constantly doing that. That's great advice. Thank you for that. Your probiotics and the science behind them is, we talked about the wonky science for all our health nerds out there, but it's also, I know it's famous also because of, it is the one probiotic that the legendary, iconic Halle Berry takes. So, I mean, how did that happen?
Yeah. So Halle Berry, a lot of people don't know, actually had diabetes, and she is from Cleveland. And so as she sort of explains it, there was this conversation that she was having and advice that she was getting from the Cleveland Clinic to try this probiotic. We actually came into the Cleveland Clinic through Dr. Mark Hyman, who is a big fan of Acromantia, actually was excited about it long before I think we even existed. And so when he found out that we were making it, he got excited about it, introduced it into the Cleveland Clinic, and then that's how she got it. And really what happened for her was that she was able to see immediate health results. And look, this is somebody who is incredibly healthy, thinking about their nutrition all the time, obviously, you know, an icon in fitness and aging gracefully. And so for her to be able to, you know, see the needle moved with our product, I think was a very big deal for her. And as you might imagine, she gets people share things like probiotics with her all the time. And she had never seen any probiotic do anything for her. And so when I met her, she has, you know, shared with me the story. And at this point now, she's been on the product for years. And at some point, she basically said, look, Colleen, I love the science about what you guys have built, but we need to build awareness. Like, nobody knows what this product is. And so I can help you with that. I can help you build a brand. I can help you build awareness. And she and I really just got along. So she eventually became an investor in the company, has been out there talking about the product, and has been just an amazing partner to get to know. And I would say, never in a million years would I have ever said to you, I will one day be texting with Halle Berry, you know, almost every day. But that's literally where we're at now, because she's such a big advocate and she's so passionate and just really rolls up her sleeves and gets the work done to make things happen.
Love that. Shout out to Halle Berry. Shout out to Cleveland. I love Cleveland. I'm in Pittsburgh, which is where we have like a little bit of a rivalry, but we're geographically close to each other. But there's so much. People would be shocked. There's so much wellnessy stuff, in part because of the Cleveland Clinic's Functional Medicine Center, but it's just amazing. Like Town Hall, if you've ever been, shout out to Town Hall, Bobby George, who owns Town Hall. It's one of the busiest, but also the healthiest restaurants in the country. It's like a feet away from the Cleveland Clinic. Kayla Barnes, a lot of people know Kayla Barnes. She's in Cleveland. Anyways, I'm a Cleveland super fan, and Halle Berry is another reason. Because there's so many cool things coming out of Cleveland.
Love it.
Yeah. All right. Last question is, what is a book? It could be fiction, nonfiction, that got you thinking in a fresh new way.
Let me think. I mean, I probably would go back to some of those pivotal books that we were required to read when we were in high school. I actually did this thing where when I was in my 20s, I went back and reread a lot of those reading materials. And one of the ones that I think I had to read in high school, and I was like, what is this book all about, that I went back and reread and really loved, was The Metamorphosis. And I think that book, when you're a little bit older, you maybe have a deeper appreciation for it. But I think it's important, this idea that your dream state and your awake state, you know, if they meld into each other, that there's this ability to metamorphosize. And so kind of taken into the world that we're in today, if you can dream it, you can make it. And also, in kind of to bring it back to the microbiome, you know, we are constantly evolving and improving. And as humans, as we age, we don't have to accept depletion of things getting worse in our bodies. There is an opportunity and a way for us to continue to evolve with the bodies that we have as they evolve too. And so hopefully everybody is constantly feeling like they're metamorphosizing into new and better butterflies.
I love that. Amen to that. So I have a special code for everybody for your amazing products that I love and I recommend to telehealth patients. I take personally, I take just the plain Acromantia, but all of our, like you said, different tools for different people based on what they need. So everybody, you have to go to pendulumlife.com. That's pendulumlife.com, pendulumlife.com. Use code WILLCOLE, all one word, at checkout. You get 20% off when you go to pendulumlife.com. Again, that's code WILLCOLE, all one word. You 20% off your first membership month. So thank you so much for doing that.
Yeah, we're excited to help people, you know, lower the barrier to trialing. And we also have a ton of resources on our website if you want to learn more about the microbiome, what these strains do. And we really welcome and encourage anybody. Give us feedback, ask us questions. This is a new science, and we're really here to share and learn alongside you. So appreciate people's feedback.
Thanks so much, Colleen.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks again for listening to The Art of Being Well. If you have a chance, please rate and review the podcast here. And if you like what you're hearing, hit follow and pass it along to a friend. To see more, head to drwillcole.com/podcast. I'll be back again next Thursday, and I hope you will too. Talk soon. Thank you.
Please note that this episode may contain paid endorsements and advertisements for products and services. Individuals on the show may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to in this episode.